This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mick Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mick Delivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with Mick Delivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Dramatic pause. A dramatic pause says something without saying anything at all. Dramatic pause is a go-to for podcasters, presidents, and radio voiceovers. It makes you look really smart, even if you're not. Feet deserve a go-to like that. Like Hey Dude shoes. Light, comfy, good to go to.
When you shop at a Walmart Vision Center, you get it. You know that you'll spend a little less on stylish glasses for the whole family.
Welcome to the Vision Center. Let me know if you need help finding the perfect frames.
Hey, Mom, you were right. These glasses are cool.
Hon, they take our insurance. That means Papa's getting a new pair, too.
Whoa, glasses start at just $39. Next stop, groceries.
So you can get a little more of what you need. Find a Vision Center near you. Save money. Live better. Walmart.
And welcome back to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. Joining me right now is Craig Coben and Emilio Donnell. This is our post-match show of Fulham's victory against Preston North End, which brings Fulham back to the Premier League. We're going to talk all about it, and I cannot wait to get into talking about it. And I want to thank everyone for being patient with me to getting back from Orlando, but I got back. I know it's a day later, but we're still going to talk about the match, and I look forward to it. And if you're watching us, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're really trying to build this up. We're going back to the Premier League. We need people to follow us on YouTube to help other Fulham supporters and other fans of other teams find us. So please subscribe to Cottage Talk on YouTube. Okay. Craig, I'm going to go to you first. First, welcome back. And I hope things are going well. Give me your opening thoughts of last night. Maybe start with a celebration and we could talk about the match. Just your overall experience at Craven Cottage, watching Fulham get promoted once again to the Premier League.
Well, Russ, I was standing in the Hammersmith end in row QQ and H5 block, which, as you know, is one of the more vocal parts of the stadium. And the fans were all chanting how, you know, we're going on the pitch. And when the stewards came out in about the 85th minute, everyone booed them and started to go down towards the pitch, ready to invade it, irrespective of what the stewards were going to try to do. It was like King Canute trying to stop the flood coming into the city. It was just a massive number of people. It was really a carnivalesque atmosphere, people really having a good time. Obviously, not much suspense. It was quite clear we were always going to get promoted. And once we went two or three goals up, it was quite clear that this was going to be the night. So it was a fun, funny, joyous experience, really an unforgettable night at the cottage.
That's fantastic. And I'm glad that you had a chance to experience it. Emilio, just give me your overall experience. You were there as well. And what's great is that I could talk to both of you. You experienced this. What is your experience from last night?
Hey, hi, Greg. Great to have you back on the show. It's been a long time. You know, it's been a very long time. And yeah, it just for me, it was all about not necessarily about the performance on the pitch. The performance was a championship winning performance. We rode a bit of luck the first 10 minutes, stepped up a couple of gears. Game was all pretty much done and dusted by half time. It was all the things, the celebrations, the things that Craig mentioned. You know, those you don't experience that every day, to be honest. You know, we saw that at Wembley 4 years ago, Russ, when you came over.
Yep.
That was at Wembley, not on our own pitch. Different experience, great celebrations. 2 years ago, you know, nobody was at Wembley. It didn't feel so much as a celebration. I remember I was very downbeat after winning that final, if you remember, on the show, saying actually I was worried about next season. But today,
I know you were already on to next season.
Yeah, you know, it was this time around. You're there, going on the pitch. You know, there's me. If everyone else is doing it, so am I. I'm going to jump on the bandwagon, climbed over the hordes, hurt my back in the process by maybe jumping. You know, maybe the drop was lower than I thought, so slightly hurt my back, but it was worth it. You know, walking on that hallowed turf, you know, beautiful grass, just touching the grass with your own hands. The players within meters away from you. Then the players went back into the dressing room, came back out, celebrated with the fans. You know, got some great footage, great videos. That's what I'll remember more about yesterday. Is that sort of pure celebration? I know we haven't won the title yet, but
not
overall, yet. You don't experience those scenes every day. The ones that spring to mind was when we beat Derby County in the playoffs a few years back. You know, that was something similar. Obviously, Europa League getting to the final, that's it, the Hamburg second leg, similar type of scenes. And going back all the way to 1982 when we drew with Lincoln City, we had to avoid defeat in that game. And we scraped through 1-0. Rob Wilson and Gordon Davis remember that game very well. And again, a lot of people jumped onto the pitch and just celebrated with the players because we got promoted that year. So that was for me what I remember. I'll take away with yesterday. Just nice spring evening, warm sunshine, clean sheet, 3 points, promotion, and celebrating with the fans and the players. What more can you ask for? So yeah, overall, that's what I'll take away from the game yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of Derby 2018. Yeah. It was very different from the pitch invasion, which I recall, which was the win over Chelsea in 2006, which precipitated some fighting and a little bit of mayhem and carnage.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's where I was going to go with you guys, because again, I wanted to focus on the celebrations, what was interesting. And I got to watch a lot of video, and I've watched, and the club is basically released some really good videos, and one they just released probably a couple of hours ago, which really shows you inside the dressing room, the players coming back out. It also shows this, guys. I don't know if you got a good view of this, but I'm curious your thoughts about Marco Silva taking a ride. Craig, do you get a view of this? I could not believe there's a video of a fan basically putting him on his shoulders. What were you thinking when you were watching all this? I saw knee skins and the players getting rides.
I was too far to be able to see any of that. So I can't really comment directly, but it obviously was a joyous occasion. Mm-hmm. And although the club made a token effort to try to prevent a pitch invasion, it was quite clear that they were never going to be able to stop it, just as they couldn't stop the fans from invading the pitch in 2018 after we defeated Derby in the playoff, right, in the semifinal. You know, it's really just a celebration of what has been a phenomenal season for all of us. And, you know, as I said, the spear in the ground was joyous, but a little bit carnivalesque. It was boisterous, a little bit naughty, but in a kind of good way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I want to get your thoughts about that, Emilio, because, again, I was watching this while on a plane coming back from Orlando. I got to watch the end, and thankfully the stream kept going for a good 10 minutes. So I got to watch a lot of this. And, you know, and again, I just want to mention Gentleman Jim was a little critical about the celebration at first, but then he noticed that his daughters were actually on the pitch as well. So he kind of changed this too, which was kind of interesting. But I think he got the spirit of it. I guess he was just concerned for safety. That's just my guess on that. But what were your thoughts about the celebration just in general, Emilio? Because, again, it's been a great season. And I don't have no issue with the fans celebrating, going on the pitch. It wasn't out of control. It didn't look like out of control to me.
Well, let's see if I take my example. So I remember, I agree with Craig. What stood out was 5-10 minutes before the end of the game, the stewards started lining up just behind the Hammers and the Then, and we knew clearly what they were there to do. And, you know, they weren't going to get, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're trying to do their job. But it, literally, when the final whistle went, it wasn't a massive flurry. It was just a gradual, a few more. Suddenly, before you know it, within 30, 40 seconds, there was a mass invasion on the pitch. And I said, you know what, guys, if everyone else is doing it, let's go and do it ourselves. So I went down a few steps down into, from where I sit in the Johnny Haynes stand. You know, it's not the easiest thing when you're carrying a work bag with a laptop on your shoulder, carrying that all around and trying to climb over the hordes. I had to, one of the guys there, one of the stewards, had, there was a little stool there. Looked at that stool. I said, I'm going to just stand on there, climbed over. But I forgot how deep the drop was. So that's when I hurt my back. And I just said, you know, everyone else is charging onto the field. So am I. And I just felt, like Craig said, it was a cheeky celebration. Yeah. In life. You know, everyone, I think we warranted that. You know, it was calm. It was good natured. No aggression, and you know, he just felt it was perfect conditions. Weather was dry, pitch was perfect conditions. The players were clearly up for it. You can just see that, you know, the fact that they were just relaxing in the last 20, 30 minutes of that second half, just waiting for that final whistle to blow. So, overall, I think there was an invitation for us to go on the pitch. Does that make sense, Craig? I don't think it was, you know,
the fans were chanting over the last 20-25 minutes, you know, that we were they were going on the pitch. I actually didn't go on the pitch, for the record, just so you know. but I did see the invasion happen. I think on from H6 block is where the fans first started to stream on, the little by little, just you know, the gates open and everybody poured onto the pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to condone pitch invasions. You don't want to make a habit of it, but it is a special moment. And I think to some degree, if the club really wanted to prevent the pitch invasion, it would have probably taken stronger measures.
Yeah, right. I agree.
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, I'm just mentioning what I was listening to, and I want to give credit to Jamie, Sean Davis, and of course, Gentleman Jim. They did an excellent job during this broadcast. And I think Jim was just concerned about everyone's safety. That's where I think where it's coming from. But then, you know, and again, you know, later on, he changed his tune. So again, I think he then saw what you guys saw and what you guys were involved in. And if Emilio goes on the pitch, you know, it's a party. So that's where I'm going on that.
But you know, Russ, after the first goal, somebody threw a beer, and I, you know, a whole bunch of us got beer thrown on top of us. So, you know, people were, you know, probably not on their best behavior. I'm not saying it was ever threatening or hostile in any way, but it was a little bit rowdy.
Okay.
And the good thing as well is, you know, after, obviously, you know, the players had eventually gone back into the tunnel and thought, actually, the crowd started to disperse. Everyone started to leave. And so did we. And it was only as I was walking down Stevenage Road, I got to the Johnny Haynes statue, and I heard the tunnel saying, oh, the players are about to, or, you know, to return back to the pitch. Please return back to your seats in the stands. And then the players will return back. So I said, okay, let's go back into the ground. So we went back inside the stadium, but I actually went in the stand next to the cottage itself. So obviously he's had that view of the players coming out of the tunnels. We waited about 10 minutes. Everything was calm. People were back in the stands. And then the players came out and did a parade of their families and celebrations on the middle of the pitch and in front of the hammy end. So overall, that was part of the initial celebration. Things calmed down and then went a little bit more calm and composed. But again, all credit to the players and the club allowing their players to come and celebrate promotion whilst we've still got the championship title still to play for.
Absolutely. I just want to share this little nugget. And again, I would recommend watching this video after the match of the players, Marco Silva and his staff. There's a part of this near the end, and you guys are going to laugh when I tell you this, of Boa and Rodrigo Muniz dancing. And basically, Boa trying to teach Rodrigo Muniz how to dance. And I thought that was just fantastic. Just a little nugget from that celebration. I'm like, this is just too funny, too nice. And seriously, guys, we deserve that. But here's my question to both of you that, again, we're talking about this. Now, Emilio, I went with you to Wembley. So I'm going to ask you, both this question. Which does this top Wembley? Emilio, does this top Wembley for you? I'm just And I'll ask the people who are watching live. Oof. Does the victory last night top beating Aston Villa at Wembley? I know they're different, but does it top it for you? Or is it the same?
I still think the Villa one was, I think I had a better, a different experience, right? I think it was nice to celebrate promotion on your home ground, in your own, you know, your own club. That was unique in that view. But I think the Aston Villa felt more like a cup final. It feels like you've actually won silverware. Yep. In a bigger crowd. There's more fans there, bigger stadium. You were there, of course, as well. So that made it even better. But for me, that if I had to top it off, we had what came off the back of 23 unbeaten games winning at Wembley.
Yeah.
We've had a great season this season, dominating the title. So very dominant teams. But that felt more like a cup final victory, if that makes
okay,
sense.
Okay, that's an interesting way to look at it.
You know, I felt it was nice to actually lift a trophy at Wembley, big stadium, in front of the global audience. That felt bigger to me.
Okay.
And that, you're not going to get an experience where Fulham win a cup final very often, are we?
So for, how about you, Craig?
We've won a few promotions over the years.
Okay.
Look, I agree with everything Emilio says, and I would just add another factor why I think the victory in 2018 may have been a little bit more joyous, if I can put it like that. And that is that we're getting promoted now for the third time in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And there is a sense in the back of our mind that we're going to be at risk of relegation. Are we really now just a yo-yo club, a little bit like another West Brom or Norwich? Yeah. As opposed to, I think in 2018, when we were promoted, bear in mind, the last time we were in the Premiership, we had been there for 13 seasons.
Yep.
I think that there was a lot of optimism at the time, you know, too much optimism, that we'd be able to stay up. And so what you don't want is to feel that, you know, these promotions, they happen every few years and then we'll get relegated and then we get promoted. It takes a little bit of the joy out of the whole process of promotion. It becomes almost routine, you know, because you know West Brom will be up in the Premiership in a couple of years' time.
Of course they will.
Yeah. Whereas for us, you know, when we were relegated, it felt like that we were condemned to the lower divisions for a very long time. And then when we were promoted, it seemed like we were ascending almost to heaven. And so I think that was the sense that we had in 2018, as opposed to now, where in the back of our minds, the question is, and I'm sure we'll discuss it now and in the future, how sustainable is our success and will we be able to stay in the Premiership this time around?
Well, that's the question, guys. And that's something that we'll be talking about obviously all the way up to next season, because can they stay up? I believe they can, but there's a lot that needs to be done. And it goes back to what you just said, sustainability. Mm-hmm. And they need to find a way to become sustainable, because right now the model that they've done this, and let's call what it is, yo-yo, it works, but it's not going to be sustainable. They need to find a platform to stay in the Premier League long-term, like you said, Craig, for 13 years. They can do it again. If they did it once, they can do it again. But they have to find a way to make that sustainability. And there's a lot that goes into it. And we'll find out if they can figure that out. But, guys, I just want to share a couple comments. We'll move on. This is from Dan Mason. Wembley was better for me, as I always wanted to watch Fulham play at Wembley. But last night was also special. This is from our co-host, Giannis. No, the Villa win was bigger. Wembley, John Terry Grealish. And that Adoy challenge. Okay. Or as we always say when Craig's here, Adoy. And before we move on, Craig, I have to ask you, how do you feel about Denny Adoy not being with Fulham anymore?
Look, he was a great team servant, a great player, always classy on the pitch. You know, when you're a professional athlete, your career is fairly short. And I'm sure the club took into account what it had to take into account in deciding to move him on to Bruges. So look, I mean, I think that we have a lot of depth now in defense. And, you know, Denny Adoy was very good at playing different positions when we were quite short in terms of staffing or in terms of personnel. So, you know, I think it probably was time for him to move on.
Okay. Very good. All right. Guys, let's get into talking about the match. But before we do, again, here's a very interesting topic to discuss. The starting 11. Craig, I'll give you first shot at this. What were your thoughts about the starting 11 and the bench?
I didn't have a lot of thoughts. I mean, it looked like the starting 11 from the previous game, other than, I guess, Cabano in lieu of Adekor Dover-Reed.
Right.
And I thought, you know, Cabano on the left side may be able to give us a little bit of speed and width out there. But I didn't really think that it was a particularly significant change versus what we've seen week in, week out with the sort of the 4-3-3 setup that we've had for almost the entirety of the season. It looked like Silva thought the personnel who have taken us this far were going to be the ones to deliver us the automatic promotion. We just needed to execute better.
Okay, very good. Over to you, Emilio. Again, I have nothing against Joe Brine, let's just say, and I have my thoughts on Anthony Robinson. I prefer Anthony Robinson over Joe Brine. So that was my only issue I have with the starting 11. How about you?
Yeah, obviously, you know my thoughts about Joe Brine, but I'm honest and grounded.
But he played well, I thought.
I'm going to call him out as he played very, very well, and especially that first half yesterday. And yeah, for me, it was no qualms about Cabano starting. I think we obviously look a lot more lively, different type of player to Dekker Dover-Reed, but clearly Dekker Dover-Reed is more of an impact sub, in my opinion, than actually a starting 11. Just clearly makes more of an impact there. So I would have to see Robinson. But in hindsight, Brian did a good job. And Seri as well. I was critical of maybe not putting Seri back in. So I looked at our performances with and without Seri. We've seen people may criticize, you know, for or against, you know, Seri being in the squad or not. But you look at when we've not had him, we've tinkered too much in that midfield. 1 minute Seri, then it's Shalabar, then it's Reed, and it's Kearney. There's no consistency in the midfield. And you see some of our performances have dipped because we've tinkered a little bit too much. So Silva has tinkered a bit in that midfield, trying to find that winning formula. But I thought we were more steady, more consistent when Seri was starting week in, week out and was rested in Keegan when he had midweek games. And we've started losing that consistency because it's been a bit too much tinkering. So, yeah, I'm allowed to call Silva a tinker man from it. But, yeah, but that was my only thing. I would have preferred to see a Seri. But net-net, we still did a job against a fairly average Preston team.
Yeah,
and the fans love Seri right now. That's what's quite interesting to see.
Yeah.
They have a song. I don't know if you could hear it, but you know that he's Marco Silva's man and he's better than Zidane. That's the main rhyme in the song.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm just sharing this comment from Colm. He says, Joe Brine, man of the match. We'll talk about man of the match in a little bit. And I have to share this as well because it's from Steve Turner. Can we give man of the match as Floyd Ayete beating Giannis to it? Sorry, Giannis. Yeah, of course we can, Steve, because you know Giannis has to mention Floyd Ayete on any episode of Cottage Talk. He just has to do it. And I'm sure he will be sending a comment as we speak. Okay, guys, let's get into the match. Craig, I'll go to you first. And I want to talk about the opening stages that Fulham were controlling the match. I watched back the first half today. I watched the second half on the plane. But then I thought that Preston North End gave Fulham a little bit of a scare. So I want to get your thoughts about the opening stages, Craig, through your eyes.
Yeah, it was quite a strange start to the match. Fulham were dominated and fairly comfortable. And then I think it was Chet Evans, the controversial Chet Evans, who almost scored or it hit off the post. And it sort of almost materialized out of nowhere. So I think it was a kind of early warning shot that although we are clearly the superior team, we would need to stay concentrating throughout the match. I think once we scored the goal pretty early on, the ninth minute or so, it did settle nerves. And, you know, it was really the first goal was really down to the work that was done by Joe Brine on the left side, checking off two defenders, cutting inside and laying off a brilliant pass for Mitrovic to finish. But it was quite strange, you know. There, both at the beginning of the first half, end of the second half, Preston North End actually had reasonable opportunities to score.
They absolutely did, Craig, and that's what's strange about this. I'm glad that you talked about that, Emilio, because that's going to then go to talking about the goal. And again, after they have their spell, then it doesn't take much for Fulham to get that goal. You know, you could say that we're controlling the match, and then they have a spell. But then, I won't say out of nowhere, Emilio, you get the goal from Mitro, and let's talk about the opening goal, because as you and I were talking about off-air, you said this to me. that this goal changed the match because you thought that the save by Rodak, if he doesn't make that save, we have a different match. So this changes the game, the opening goal.
Exactly. You think about it, you know, two poor defeats in the last two games and nerves are starting to creep in. A number of fans starting to question Fulham's bottle. You know, have they got enough gas to get them over the finishing line? So, you know, including me, obviously I was a little bit starting to feel nervous. I started to see, you know, similarities to the 1982-83 seasons when we were dominating, you know, third place, comfortable, looking for automatic promotion. And suddenly we blew it in that last quarter of the season. So nerves were starting to creep in. And then when we saw that chance, you know, give Rodak some credit, he made a good reaction save there. If that had that gone in, like I said, different story. It might not have been a comfortable 3-0. Nerves were starting to creep in. There would have been a few jeers in the crowd. You know, that impacts the morale on the pitch. So the fact that we then sort of got away with murder, bit of a kick up the backside, we regrouped. Joe Bryan in the first 10, 15 minutes was making a lot of forward runs, you know, looking very positive, trying to prove a point. I feel like he was trying to prove his value in his squad ready for next season. Maybe he had to prove to the manager. Played very, very well in that first half. And that pass to Mitrovic was sublime. And I didn't think Mitrovic was going to get there, to be honest. It was the other end of the pitch. But for me, I thought slightly to the left. But blimey, we look at Mitrovic.
Great goal, though. Fantastic goal.
Great finish. Great reaction. Got there first and you know, pinpoint shots right in the, you know, straight in the corner of the goal. But compare that to a year ago, Mitrovic would have been nowhere near that ball. That's what confidence does to you. Appetite, hunger, confidence. Things always seem to go well for you when you're in that.
But Emilio, I think it goes beyond everything that you're saying. I agree with all that, but it also has to do with the structure of Marco Silva's system. I think that's a factor in this too.
Yeah, absolutely. Playing to, you know, the team are playing as a squad, as playing as a team.
Exactly.
Right? That's the key thing, you know, but there are, you know, we know where there's weaknesses in this team. There's no team is perfect. And, you know, the owners, I'm sure, will address that in the summer. But overall, you know, that kick up the backside when that could be 1-0 down, and suddenly this is the thing. How many times have you seen the Premier League clubs get away with murder? 1 minute later, 1-0. You know, this is the Premier League's going to be ruthless. So again, we may not get many chances.
That's an interesting way to put it, Emilio.
You've got to take them when they come. And we were on the reverse side there. Got away with it. Packed, 1-0.
And it happens all the time in the Premier League. I'm glad that you mentioned that. So that might actually be a good sign, Emilio, because that's what you need to do in the Premier League. It's very ruthless. And over to you, Craig. Let's talk about the second goal. And what's interesting about this is a fantastic finish from Fabio. And it's great, but it also saddens me because I think we all know that he's going to leave. But you see his ability here. And just a fantastic finish by Fabio. But it wasn't just him that was involved with the goal.
No, you're right. I mean, the goal materialized out of nothing. You had a clearance by Rodak, the goalkeeper. I think Mitro headed it on to Niskin's Cabano. Cabano's cross was actually partially deflected, and Carvalho made quite an excellent finish. A couple of observations. I think first, the Preston North End players really never got that close to our players in the game, except when they were trying to foul them. And Mitro had too much space for his header. Cabano, even though his cross was partially deflected, he had a fair amount of space as well. The second observation I make was that we had most joy on the left side. The first goal was from Brian coming down on the left side. The second goal, Cabano on the left side. And we seem to have focused, I think, more on the left than on the right. And the third is, you're right, it was a classy finish. Could the keeper have done better?
Possibly. Okay. And that's going to lead to talk about the third goal, Emilio, because Mitro scores his 40th goal. I can't believe I'm saying that. 40 goals, Emilio. I'm curious how Scott Parker thinks that Solanke is a better striker. I don't get it, but okay, fine. He can think that. But Mitro has now scored 40 goals in this division, which is unbelievable. And this was a great finish. But also, it's set up beautifully from Harry Wilson. What's interesting about him, Emilio? I want to get your thoughts on him. Because is it just me, or is he basically hot and cold? Because I think at times he can be dominant, and other times he can go missing. Am I being too critical of Harry Wilson? Because he was on here, but I think other times I think he goes missing a little bit.
Yeah, no, nothing that's fair. I think, like you said, you don't see him involved for 90 minutes during a game when he's playing the full game. You see him in bits and spurts.
A little bit like Clint Dempsey, maybe. I'll use Clint Dempsey as an example.
There are similarities. There's a good analogy there. And I think Wilson, it will be, you know, he drifts in and out of games, but those moments he does drift in and out of games, he's involved. How many assists has he got? He's got a few goals himself. Always dangerous, always trying to catch the opposing defenders on the break. And that 1-2, that run from Wilson first and foremost, and then the link-up play, the 1-2 with him and Mitrovic, and, you know, was quality. And again, that's a team playing with confidence. You know, the fact that we're 2-0 up, we could play with a bit more flair. We can, you know, look at that dominant spell, and that's, you know, in that second, in that first half, incredible. But what you saw was the clinical nature of Mitrovic's finishing. Literally, 1-2, bang. No hesitation, no additional touch. He only had one thing on his mind. And look, and that was clinical. That was ruthless. That's from a striker who's going to break even more records. Apparently, is it Preston North End have only scored 44 goals all season as a team? Yeah, Mitrovic has scored almost that himself, single-handedly. So look, you know, that ruthless finish was exactly what we've seen all season. And you know, overall, you know, we went into half-time, game over, and that started down tools. I know everyone wanted to see a 6-7-0 victory, but you know what? Preserve your players, which is why we'll talk about that in a minute, all the, some of those tactical substitutions second half. Preserve them. We've got Bournemouth on Saturday. That's more important than trying to win 5-0 last night.
Okay, excellent stuff. Now let's focus on the second half. And Craig, just give me your overall thoughts on the second half, because, again, when I look at it, I wouldn't say cruising because, again, as you already mentioned, Preston North End, I thought, played well to start the second half and looked dangerous and had an opportunity or two. They were starting to get more corners again. I've noticed that. I'm like, okay, here we go again. But I don't think Fulham were holding on. Give me your reaction to the second half, just your analysis.
Well, look, Preston North End were in a deep hole. They were down 3-0. And their best player had hobbled off injured in around the 25th minute with Chet Evans. So they didn't really have their best striker on the pitch. And this is a team that struggles to score any goals. They started the second half pretty well. They came, I think they hit the post again. There's a strong save by Rodak off the post. Which again, I think caught us all a little bit by surprise. It was at the far end of the pitch, so I couldn't see it very well. But after we weathered the storm for 4 or 5 minutes, it was business as usual. I wouldn't say the team cruised, but what the team did do is it killed the game off by possession.
Okay.
And there were points, you know, at many points in the second half, where the fans were going ole, or they're going shoot every time. I mean, the ball even gets passed back to Rodak, and everyone in the Hammersmith end is chanting shoot. It was actually a fairly easy, fairly dominant, possession oriented display in the second half, just to kill off the game more than anything else. Once we had weathered the sort of the initial rush in the first 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay. Over to you, Emilio. Your thoughts on the second half. You also talked about the subs, so feel free to share your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we didn't have to really get out of second gear, did we, to be honest? It was the Preston, for all their worth, they tried to make a bit of a run for it in the first 5-10 minutes of the second half. But overall, you know, it was all about possession, like Craig said, and you know, it was important to protect the players, your key players for the Saturday's game against Bournemouth. Why risk? Why take the unnecessary? And it was also an opportunity to just give some of the other players a bit of game time. You know, at the end of the day, you want to keep your players on their toes. You want to keep them fit. And you want to give them as much opportunity relish the victory. So those substitutions were the right things to do. It's nice to win 5-6-0. And if we wanted to push harder, I'm sure we could have got more goals. But taking Harrison Reed off, to be honest, I think he was looked a bit disgruntled. I'm trying to say, you know, I like to look at, as you know, I like to look at people's body language and reactions. He looked a bit disgruntled when he got substituted, but clearly it was tactical. If Harrison Reed clearly is probably going to start away to Bournemouth on Saturday, so keep him fresh, take him off, and you know, put in Seri, who put in a good shift, and obviously a different type of player to Reed. But same thing, Mitrovic. I think let's not talk about the miss. He missed one of the easiest chances of the season, in my opinion. You know, one on one with the keeper. If he had more time. Because he had so much time, he tried to place it. Albeit goalkeeper made a good save, but if he had to shoot first time, I reckon he would have gone with power and probably would have scored. But again, can't be critical with a 40-goal, you know, person. But overall, he could have got his hat trick, and that he's missed, you know, not many easier chances than that one all season. But overall, comfortable second half, and it was just a matter of running down that clock, wasn't it? I think the players wanted the celebrations on the pitch. and they were clearly waiting for that to happen. So I'm surprised Tom Kenny, anything I'll say is I'm surprised Tom Kenny lasted as long as he did, because he got a warranted yellow card in the first half, a clumsy foul.
Yes.
And it didn't look right. And he was quite careless with his passing yesterday, to be honest. And, you know, but then the second half, he sort of, you know, there's a few moments here and there, but overall I'm surprised. I think someone mentioned it earlier on the chat. I'm surprised that Kenny wasn't taken off a lot sooner, because it didn't seem as effective as it could have been, to be honest, and quite careless with his passing and quite careless with his fouling as well. He committed quite a few fouls, if you want to analyze it.
Okay, very good stuff, guys. Okay, coming up next, we're going to talk about man of the match. Mm. We're also going to talk about the upcoming match against Bournemouth and Fulham's chances of winning the league. Okay, guys, let's not waste any time. And if you're watching live, feel free to share who your man of the match was. No, Giannis, it's not Floyd Ayite, okay? So over to you, Craig. We've already talked a little bit about it. I think Joe Bryan is a good shout. We've had some people mention Joe Bryan. Who's your man of the match?
I'll go with Joe Bryan.
Joe Bryan, okay.
The work he did along left side was fairly decisive, especially getting us the lead. And, you know, we tended to attacked quite successfully along left side and caused them quite a lot of problems. It's hard to say that he stood out that much more than anyone else. And of course, Mitrovic scored two goals and he would have a fairly good claim for being man of the match. But I thought the work that was done along left side was pretty decisive.
Okay, I'm going to share some comments before I go to you, Emilio. From Giannis, Joe Bryan, my man of the match, hands down. Let's see. Ross Nuttall says Harrison. Okay. Stephen Murray says, man of the match, Mitro. Who else? Well, we've already mentioned Joe Bryan. So over to you, Amelia. Is it Joe Bryan, Mitro, or someone else?
To be honest, it's probably a bit boring to give it to Mitrovic. To be honest, I think if you want to look at it on, on technicality and quality, probably Mitrovic, because he was involved in all, scored two and involved in the third. But it's getting a bit boring. How many man of the matches has he won this season? So I'm going to give it to Joe Bryan as well. I think he had a good first half in particular. Second half, a little bit quiet. He wasn't absolutely, you know, he didn't have much to do in the second half. Didn't really venture forward. But overall, I'm going to give it to Joe Bryan, to be honest. I think you could give it to Rodak because he made that crucial save at the beginning of the game, but clearly he made a couple good saves that game. So Joe Bryan, Rodak, and Mitrovic. But I'll give it to Joe Bryan just sentimentally. I think before he leaves the club, it's worth him getting a man of the match for the match yesterday.
From at least Cottage Talk.
Yeah, from this one, Cottage Talk, yeah.
Okay. Steve Reynolds says Rodak on the basis that the first half saved me, have made things tough. And like you said, and of course, Giannis, okay, Giannis, fine, whatever. Got to give you your Florida Ite shout. That's fine. Let's see. Very good stuff, guys. Okay.
Chris Davidson, Tom Kenny, man of the match.
I saw that. But
what a surprise, Chris.
But that's also our stuff going back and forth that I haven't shared, but tongue in cheek stuff with Chris. But he, you know, again, very interesting stuff, but I'm actually going to share a comment from Chris because I want to get both of your thoughts on this, because here's something that, you know, and again, we were talking about Fabio, right? So I want to get your thoughts on this. Chris says, Carvalho was excellent again. He's such a talent, will soon be starting for Liverpool. I'm not so sure about starting. He's going to be a big loss. Craig, is Fabio going to be a big loss?
He's going to be a massive loss. I think that he was... His speed, the space he creates for other players, the amount of attention that the opposing teams have to show him, you know, it's more than just the statistics that he racks up. And we're going to need a player like that with the pace, the skill, and really the lateral movement that he offers. So it is going to be a big loss. I don't know whether he'll be starting for Liverpool.
I don't know either about that, but I understand that. I think he's going to be a loss too.
I do think as we look ahead to next season, if we want to have Mitro effective, we're going to have a lot of movement and speed up front to create the space for Mitro to operate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great shout there, Craig. Emilio, what are your thoughts about this? And also what Craig just shared about how this could affect Mitro.
Yeah, I think, again, minute. Clearly proved a point with a great finish with his goal. So, but yeah, it will be a big miss. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, I don't want players playing at the club who don't want to be there, to be honest. So it's, I'm all done with all this cover. You know, we've waited one season for him to sign a contract. He's chosen not to, and he's decided to move on. So let's be very clear as well. it hasn't been confirmed by the club that he's leaving. It will be, it's just a matter of formality, but he hasn't been confirmed yet. But no, he wants to leave. I have no qualms about that. I don't want players at the club who don't have the desire to want to stay. He's had 12, 12 months to sign a contract and chosen not to. So I can't be sympathetic about that.
Okay. Very good. Excellent stuff, guys. All right. So two final topics are this. Let's talk about Bournemouth and then we'll talk about the league itself, winning the league. So, Craig, I'll give you first shot at this. Now, it's a huge match. We'll call it what it is, the Parker Derby, whatever you want to call it, going back to play Scott Parker. Is it personal or are the players just going to be professional? You know, I'm curious your view on how you think they're viewing this. Are they, do you think it's just another match? I'm talking about the players. Or do you think that they're thinking, I might have a point to prove here?
I think for the players, it's just another match. I've even from Mitrovic, whom Parker didn't play very much last season. I think for him, it's just another match. They, these guys, they know one week, you know, they know that the players and the managers on the other bench, one week they're their opponents, next week they're their teammates. And I think they just see this as a job they have to do. I think for the fans, it carries quite a lot of emotion.
Oh, absolutely.
This, all the success that Scott Parker did have at the club, and he had success at the club.
He did.
Never really won over the fans. He was seen as sort of a Chelsea implant or a Tottenham implant. And, you know, I mean, the fans, I think, during the good times respected Parker, but they never really took to his style of play, which was a fairly conservative tactical approach. And the fact that he left for just another club, a kind of a lateral move, I think also left the fans with a little bit of
bitter taste.
A bitter taste. There were some songs in the Hammersmith End about Scotty Parker last time, which I'm not going to repeat because this is a family podcast, but they do reflect, I think, some lingering hostility from at least some sections of the Hammersmith End.
Okay, well, before I go to Emilio, you already talked about what it might be with the fans. Do you think it's more to do with his conservative play or maybe just the way that he acted with the fans? You know, and again, the way that he held himself, you know, I criticized him, Craig, because I don't think he ever took personal blame for any loss that Fulham had. And that bothered me for whatever reason. He would blame the players, but he never seemed to put any on himself. So is it the style or could it also be him as an individual?
I think it's a couple of factors. I think, first of all, I think the style of play was very conservative and some fans felt it was unimaginative. I think, secondly, although he did play for the club at the end of his career, you know, he was always perceived as really more of a sort of having a Chelsea pedigree. And in much the same way as Mark Hughes had a fair amount of success when he was manager at Fulham, but the fans never took to Mark Hughes.
That's a great point.
And by the way, the fans, even when Ranieri had a decent start, okay, they didn't take that to him either. Anybody with a kind of Chelsea pedigree carries a certain amount of paint with them when they come to Fulham. There's no question about it. And so I think some of that has to do with it. I don't think the way he conducted himself, you know, in press conferences was entirely appropriate. I met him once at an event and he was charming and intelligent.
Emilio met him and felt the same way.
Yeah. But it, you know, the fans never took to him even when we were relatively successful. Yeah. So there's a bit of hostility. I actually don't think it's the kind of deep visceral hatred that sometimes we have towards other managers, like, I don't know, Warnock or somebody like that.
Right.
But you know, he was perceived fairly or unfairly as a fairly cold fish, and that was reflected in the style of play.
Oh, very interesting. Over to you, Emilio. I want to get your thoughts on what Craig shared, what I shared, and also your thoughts on Bournemouth and, of course, Scott Parker. You've met him, and you had some very nice things to say about your conversation with him, and I'm glad that Craig mentioned he had mentioned too. I've heard that he's very nice in person, and I believe that that could be very true, and I'm not putting him down. I'm just saying what I perceive. But what are your thoughts about the whole Chelsea angle to this?
Yeah, interesting, because I was at the same event as Craig was at that about a couple of years back when he was the manager. Yeah. And again, all I recall is very professional, but very stubborn. You know, I was criticizing his style of football and his tactics, and he was very assertive to me that he wasn't going to change. That's the way he was brought up to play football. And that's the way he wants to manage the team as well. So look, he stuck to his guns. 2 years later, he's still playing the same brand of football, same philosophy. So look, I think the club have got a job to do. There's no urgency to beat Bournemouth on Saturday. The key thing is not to lose a game and pretty much guarantee the title. We're one inclusive of goal difference, we're 10 points clear, and Bournemouth have got a maximum of 15 points to get. So they have to win more than we do. So overall, yesterday's promotion has put to bed the Parker legacy. Let's move on from that. You know, I think it's in a way, if they get promoted, maybe it guarantees us potentially 2 wins next season. So let's look at it from a positive. You know, I'm trying to put a positive spin here.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Let's try to see how we can get some points next year. But overall, I think we've moved on now. We've had a successful season. We've got promoted. Okay. We've changed our brand. I never really considered the Chelsea legacy there that Craig mentioned. It's a good point.
It's interesting. You know,
but overall, you know, the fact that we've still managed to retain Mitrovic, you know, that if Park had still been a manager, we wouldn't have had the squad we've got now. Probably wouldn't be in a position where we are now. So again, we've moved on from that, and thankfully the owners made the right decision. And I didn't like the way he brokered and engineered a move out of the club and tried to screw the club over. That's what frustrated me. I said, you give him a chance when he's manager, didn't work out. You support the team through good and bad times, but the way it ended was a bit unnecessary. That's painted a big black cloud over my view of him. So to be honest, we've moved on. I'd rather we don't talk about Scott Parker. Let's talk about Marco Silva and what we do in the Premier League next year.
I'm there with you, Emilio.
I will say one thing though.
Go ahead.
If the weather's good in Bournemouth, it's going to be a great away day because you go to the beach. I went to the last Bournemouth away match. I can't go this time around. And it's a lot of fun on that beach, Russ. You really ought to visit it.
I've heard from my friend, sorry to drop a name, but Asmir Begovic had nothing but good things to say about Bournemouth. So he told me how much he enjoyed Bournemouth, not just the club, but where he lived as well. So, or where he was playing his football, because I believe he still lives in London. But anyways, enough about Asmir.
And the other point to mention as well is, yeah, you want to get the job done as quickly as possible, but it'd also be nice to celebrate the championship at home. So do that against Nottingham Forest next week. I can see both sides. You know, you want to prove a point in Bournemouth Stadium, stick two fingers up to Scott Parker and win the title there. But equally, you know, it'd be nice to actually win the title at Craven Cottage. So I'm split, to be honest. I don't know what the fans who are watching, what they prefer. Do they prefer to win the title at Bournemouth or do it in front of your home fans against Nottingham Forest? What do people think?
It's a great question. If you're watching live, feel free to comment when you want Fulham to win the title. And actually, you know, again, they haven't done it yet, so they still have work to do. And that's going to lead to end the show. Now win the league. I actually tweeted this out last night because my number one thing, Craig, was automatic promotion. Just get automatic promotion so we could start planning for the Premier League. And then I could think about the league, winning the league. Well, now we could talk about winning the league. Here's my question to you about this. Do you need Fulham to win the league? Would you be very upset if they did not win the league, if, say, Bournemouth overtook them? Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I think it's unlikely. But how important is this to you that they win the league now?
Well, I remember when we won the league in 2001.
Right.
And there was a parade down Fulham Road, Fulham Palace Road.
So you kind of want, I see where this is going, yep.
And I would love to see a repeat of that 21 years later, and I think all the fans would.
Okay.
Clearly, the priority was to gain automatic promotion. We've achieved that. We can plan for next season and all the rest of it. But it would be really the sweetest icing on the cake to be able to celebrate on the streets with the players in an open-top bus. You know, fantastic season, and have a parade that we haven't had in 21 years.
Okay. And I actually want that. I want them to win the league. Let me just stress this. I'm just playing devil's advocate as we talk, you know, hosting a show. I'm just saying, do you need them to win the league? And Emilio, I'll ask you that question because I obviously want them to win the league. But for me, the priority, and you and I have talked about this, was promotion. Well, now that's done. Now win the league.
And again, if it will feel a disappointment if we don't win the league, and with the commanding position we've been in, the, you know, this season, and you know, with the players that we've got, we should be winning the league, to be honest. You know, the fact that we know we've started a bit in recent games, but overall, you know, and the other thing I was talking to the fans, yeah, some people around me, is psychological. I know it doesn't matter whether you win them with 86 points or 90 points, but winning with less than 90 points doesn't feel like it's enough, even though you win the title. Because like, if you look at all the clubs over the last few seasons, they've all won quite comfortably, and yet we've started a lot last few games. So it'd be nice to get some commanding performances, get over the 90-point mark, and that feels more dominant, 2 points per game. That was in my head. To be champions, you've got to get 2 points per game. So 92.
Okay.
Psychology. I know it doesn't make a difference whether you win the title with 86 or 92, but if you want to classify yourself as a top club versus a good club at this level, and it has been, let's be honest, it's been a weak division. We've said that all season. It's not been a quality division.
Yeah, we still agree with that.
And hit that 90-point mark. So psychologically, I want 2 more wins, you know, win the title, but get to 2 points per game. I know it doesn't make a difference, but psychologically it does.
Okay, and I'm going to share some comments. This is from Steve Reynolds, who actually has been making this argument to me personally. No one remembers who comes in second. Let's see. Val says, very important to win the league. You can't let the other lot pip you at the post. Man. So, Craig, what are your thoughts about that? You know, again, is Bournemouth a factor in this for you if they came in second? Or do you think it's important for them to win the league? And what are your thoughts about Emilio sharing, getting to that 90-point threshold?
Look, I think you do want to win the league because it certainly is a way of saying that you are the best team. And it sets you up as well as you can be for the following season. I don't really focus that much on whether we have 86 or 90 points. I do agree with you. I do think the league is weaker than it was 3 or 4 years ago. There are reasons for that. There's less money around to buy foreign players. You've had several of the large teams get docked points over financial irregularities. You've had others under pressure with the financial fair play rules. So some of the teams that could have caused us problems this season didn't have the money to do so. And I think we had a substantial financial advantage. And if we don't win the league, you really feel that maybe you didn't take, full advantage of, you know, really the dominance that we had financially. But bear one thing in mind, no matter how well we do, we still are going to need to get a lot of new players in next season.
I agree.
And I think one of the salutary effects of having lost the 2 previous games is that it's a reminder that we are going to need reinforcements.
Totally agree.
Maybe not the wholesale changes that we did in 2018. There's probably too many. You need to retain some semblance of continuity, but make no mistake, there are, you know, probably 5, 6, 7 spots that are probably going to have to be upgraded on the team.
I totally agree, Craig. And that's, again, an interesting sidebar to all of this with the losses. I thought about that to say, I agree with you that the losses, not that it needs to be reminded that we need to have reinforcements, but in a way, I'm glad that it comes out. It makes you think about it. And I'm like, okay, where are the weaknesses? And this is when they need to evaluate. And now they can have a little bit of a jump. And I know they're already working on it, but now you know you're in the Premier League. There's no doubt of that now. Now you go full force. You find out where you're weak. You make your decisions now, Craig. You don't wait until after the season to make your decisions on building your team for next season. You do it now. I think you'd agree with me on that.
Look, I think it's been pretty clear for a while that we were going to get promoted. And so the team, I don't have any excuse for not already having done quite a bit of planning. I think the big advantage of automatic promotion is that we can start signing players fairly quickly once the window reopens. Whereas when we went to through the playoffs, we were always on the back foot and behind the curve in terms of trying to recruit new players.
Okay.
But we are going to have to be quite unsentimental, if I can put it like that.
Sure.
In deciding whom to recruit, because some of our fan favorites may not be up for the Premier League challenge. Bear in mind, several of these players have been through 1 or even 2 promotions.
Right.
And so they've already been tested at the Premier League level. And for one reason or another, they were found either wanting or they really couldn't make the starting 11. So I think the club is going to have to be very, as I said, very unsentimental around recruitment.
Totally agree. Guys, we do have to wrap this up. Great show. Emilio, before we go, final thoughts and we'll wrap this up.
Look, we've had a fantastic season. You know, maybe we should do a show about comparing this season to the 2001 season. Maybe with a lot of it.
That would be a great show. Craig is smiling. I that would be a great show. I'm with you on that. And you guys could really fill me in on that. I wasn't a supporter of that. I think that's a great idea.
You know, but overall, you know, we've got the promotion. We deserve to be there. To be honest, over the course of the season, and I agree with Craig's points. It's a moment of celebration. Let's enjoy the championship. Let's enjoy the promotion. They've got lots to look forward to. And I think we're going to see some interesting times. Let's also praise the owners here. I don't think the owners get enough credit. You know, again, it's, two consecutive, the third promotion under their reign. I know we've had three relegations under their reign. We've had three promotions under their reign as well. So they can take lessons from the previous experiences. And I think they'll learn from it. And I think we've got a better manager in situ. Let's see. Next season's another season. Let's see, but let's enjoy it. Let's enjoy the moment. You know, these moments don't happen every day.
I agree. Mr. Coben, it's been way too long. Thank you so much for joining Emilio and I.
Thank you, Emilio.
All right.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much.
It's been a great show. We're going to have many more shows, and I'm sorry that I have not been as available as I have been in the past, but we'll be doing more shows, and trust me, we're going to do a ton of shows next season for Fulham back in the Premier League. We are Premier League. But we do have to wrap this up. For Craig Coben and Emilio Danilo, I'm Russ Coben. Thank you as always for watching and listening to Cottage Talk. It's the 90th minute and all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McDonald's share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear, and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.